Okay, bring your attention back in the room. So today is, I think it's important that we had today, and maybe more than one, I mean, we have one more day scheduled to get ready for the retreat. How many people here are actually going to do the whole retreat, which is, you know, we'll do one session Friday evening. You'll be there. Raise your hands. Let me just get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay. So we have, you know, there's room for more people, obviously. I don't know. I know some people that are going to be there that aren't here today. But, you know, this is pretty amazing, I think, amazing opportunity. And back in the day when I did this, you know, when I was in getting my introduction to Buddhism and living in Kathmandu, and I mean at Kopan Monastery and places like that, Lama Yeshe Lama Zopa, as soon as people had a strong basis of the three principles of the path, he would put them, they would send them straight away to do this retreat. This was like really important practice to do. And I'll say this, you know, I think this is important too. So this friend of mine, you know, I said, I Lama Zopa had given me, I said, I really need to purify. I mean, I felt like that, you know, I really had, not that I'd killed anybody that I knew of, but, you know, I'd done things and, you know, that I had residue, karmic residue, and my meditations weren't going well, and I knew there was work to be done. And this friend of mine said, well, look, don't tell anybody, don't go around and blab, you know, blah, 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 and talk about, you know, look, I'm doing this retreat for the, so, you know, he said, this is, if anybody asks you what you're doing, you know, say, I'm gonna be doing a practice to really, to investigate the nature of my mind. And I said that to a few people, you know, because I was leaving to go someplace. And that actually turned out to be exactly what happened. It was a practice where I really got a very strong sense of what my mind was and wasn't, and also what a mess it was. But that's another story. I think it's important, you know, it's really good to see that we have work to do, you know. I think that's very important. So in terms of my qualifications, I'm really not qualified to do it, other than the fact that I did this retreat for, I had to rush through it, so I did it in 2.5 months, because I was in, Lama Zopa had told me to go to Sri Lanka to do it back in the day, and I did it alone, although it's better, it's much better to do retreat in a group, you know, because you can feed off one another's energy, and I did 2.5 months, a little bit over 2.5 months, sitting on the side of a tea plantation, and out of a Vipassana retreat place. They had a cabin, and I did it, and I can, you know, it was the hardest thing I've ever done, and the most, from a Dharma perspective, by far and away the most beneficial thing I have ever done in my Dharma life. What you really need to know to have, to get the most out of this is what I want to cover today. Now, one of the two things too that are important, I think. One is, if you have a guru, if you don't have a guru, this is going to be harder. Now, maybe, you know, you see Geshe Gelug as your guru, or the Dalai Lama, even though you don't know him, you know, you could certainly visualize him as your guru, but this practice, one of the key points in any tantric practice is that you see your mind, the deity's mind, and your guru's mind as inseparably one. Okay? If you don't have a guru, it makes it more difficult. But you know, if you say, well, look, the Dalai Lama is, you know, somebody that I have a lot of respect for, but I can tell you, it will be very helpful for your mind to remind yourself over and over again that Vajrasattva and, you know, for me, Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa, but Lama Yeshe is the one that gave me the empowerment, and my mind are inseparably one. And to think Vajrasattva and Lama Yeshe are inseparably one, that was really helpful. So again, that's a key teaching in Tantra. And to the degree that you have a guru or a lama or a teacher that you see as a perfect being, as inseparable from a deity, it's going to be extremely helpful. And I don't know how many people do, but even if you don't, you can still get a lot of benefit from it. But it's helpful. The other thing is, I talked to Geshe Gelug yesterday, and Lama Zopa has said this. By the way, this book is the one that's Donna, did you say we'd ordered some of these for the bookstore? Okay. So this book is falling apart. But yeah, really. Anyway, the dog on these things is they messed it up when they tried to do it this way. But this one, this is the third edition, and they took out some really good things. Because I got the first edition, 2003, and then this is 2010. But, you know, this book has multiple different sadhanas in it. It also has, now does anybody know what a sadhana is? Or, puppy, yeah, what is? Yeah, it's called, you know, translated, the Sanskrit word means method of accomplishment. So it's actually the text that we use, the practice that we're going to use for this. So this, what you have in this red booklet, is the sadhana. Okay? That's what that's about. So that's the sadhana you'll use. And Lama Zopa said it's very beneficial for people, as one of the preliminary practices in each of the four traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, one of them is to do 100,000 Vajrasattva mantras. Now, you know, to do that, it took me 2.5 months. This nun, Yeshe Kadro, she did it in 6 weeks. Lama Zopa can do it in 2 weeks. Of course, he doesn't sleep, but it's another story. You know, most people, though, Lama say, just set aside 3 months to do it if you're going to do it. And that's, you know, you basically are doing, you might start out with a lot of short sessions in the beginning and do longer sessions in the middle, and then, but you know, usually the way a retreat goes is you start out kind of slow and gentle, and in the middle you really hit it hard, and then at the end you want to finish with energy, you know, so you want to come back and do another retreat. So it's like that. And but Geshe Gelug, you know, I mentioned this to him yesterday, that Lama Zopa had recommended that people maybe start their practice in a group retreat, but not necessarily. But then if they want to do 100,000, you can do it at home. So this is kind of cool. If you want to do this preliminary practice, call 100,000. It's actually 110. You have to do 10,000 more to make up for the mistakes that you made with the first 100. But to do this practice, you can do it. You can count your mantras during the retreat, and then you can do the practice at home. And you can do one or two sessions, or you could do, you know, on a weekend, you know, you might want to do 4 sessions, or a group of you may want to come together on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon, say, and do a few hours of practice together. There's lots of ways you can do it, but I've, you know, other teachers have done it this way, where you do, you know, a session in the morning and a session in the evening. Now, the minimum number of mantras that you can do to keep it going, Lama Zopa said 21, Geshe Gelug said, let's make it 7. But you have to do the sadhana. So you do the sadhana, which is not long, and then you can do as few as 7 mantras. The point is, you can't break the continuity of the retreat. You have to keep the continuity of the retreat going. If you stop for one day, even if you're sick as a dog on a ventilator, you try to get, you know, you try to get one session in that day, you know?
So if you do 7 a day, that's going to take approximately 4 years.
It's going to take a long time. So, you know, but the point is you keep the continuity going. And it gives you a real sense of accomplishment when you do that. And the point is to purify your mind. Why do we need to purify our mind? So that's the other. So, okay. Let me read a little bit. I'm going to read a few things from Lama Yeshe's commentary on this practice because I think it's very helpful. Now, what's in this book? I don't know if any. I don't even know if this book's even still available. Tantric Path of Purification. I got it when it was. It came out in '95, but this is more expanded version of the text that I used back in '82 when I did it. And this is more. Yeah, it's much nicer basically because it was the one I had was on mimeograph paper. Whatever that is. Anybody remember? Yeah. So, anyway, this book is, so the next time we meet, I will have finished this book and I'll have more to say because there's a lot to know about what to do in between sessions, right? How do you know, there's a lot of things that we need to know. So, here's Lama Yeshe talking about, and Lama Yeshe never pulled punches, so he basically said, "You people are messed up, and but the good news is Buddhism has a way to rescue you if you just do the work." You know, the Buddha said, "Avoid evil, do good, purify your mind." That's the teachings of all the Buddha. And on his deathbed, the Buddha said, "You know, if he could pull out our sins and negative karma, he would." But he said, "You have to work out your own salvation." This is that. This is working out our own salvation. So, he says, we often find that when we meditate on Lamrim, the path to liberation and enlightenment realizations, we encounter many hindrances. We cannot understand why it is so difficult to medicate, to control our minds, to gain realizations. Why do I meet with so many obstacles whenever I try to do something positive? Leading a worldly life is much easier than this. Even an hour's meditation is so difficult. Many such thoughts and questions arise. It is not a lack of wisdom. It is that over countless lives, the negative energy forces of our body, speech, and mind have accumulated such that now they fill us like a vast ocean of space. By contrast, our small intellectual wisdom knowledge is as weak as the light of a flickering little candle. A little candle isn't much help on a dark and windy night. Our tiny candle-like knowledge wisdom cannot control or release us from the overwhelming force of our negative mind. Thus, it is the energy of our wrong conceptions, our negative mind, that makes it difficult for us to actualize the everlasting peaceful path of liberation and receive realizations. Do people know what I mean by realizations? Hey, realizations, no? Come on, to be sure. What's realizations? Not really. Well, it's more than understanding. It's like it becomes who you are. For example, you know, when we have the realization of impermanence, of death and impermanence, but, you know, particularly subtle impermanence, you know, we understand that nothing lasts. Everything is in a constant state of flux. Now, intellectually, we understand that, right? But we don't live like that. We don't understand that in our bones kind of thing. A realization of renunciation, you know, in the foundation, in the three principal aspects of the path, there's one little stanza that talks about what the realization is like. So day and night, the thought that you have to, you know, gain liberation is what that realization's about. So it's when it's a profound understanding such that it affects every our mind 24/7. It's not just an intellectual understanding. So Lama's saying our tiny candle-like knowledge, wisdom cannot control or release us from the overwhelming force of our negative mind. Thus, it is the energy of our wrong conceptions, our negative mind, that makes it difficult for us to actualize the everlasting peaceful path of liberation and to receive realizations. Therefore, we need a powerful purification practice, like tantric yoga, like the tantric yoga method of Vajrasattva, to destroy both the energy forces of the ignorant mind and the negative actions of the body and speech that arise from it. The yoga method of Vajrasattva has the power to purify all negative energy, which is the main thing preventing you from actualizing the path. This impure energy creates both physical and mental hindrances and also leaves certain imprints. Philosophically, we say that these are neither mind nor form. If you're interested in this, we can investigate at another time what kind of phenomena they are. The reason I bring it up is that I'm talking about negativity. My meaning might be different from your previous understanding of them. Most Westerners think negativity refers to just the gross level of emotions. It goes much deeper than that. So, Lama's really admonishing us to do the work of purification. And Lama Tsongkhapa, after he had done all of these, amazing, studies and became, a great academic and stuff, he went into retreat for years and did 100,000 prostrations and did 100,000 of all these different practices. And the preliminary practices of Vajrasattva, the preliminary practices in the Galupa tradition, they're actually 12. I think so, 12. It might be 9, but I think it's 12. But in almost all the traditions, there's 4. The main ones are 100,000 prostrations, 100,000 Vajrasattva mantras, 100,000 mandala offerings, and 100,000 refuge formulas. So there's, that's called a nungne. And that's, in the Kagyu tradition, for example, you're really encouraged to do the nungne even before you ever get introduced to tantra, nundra. So you're encouraged to do these 4 practices before you even get interested, before you're introduced to tantric practice. In the Galupa tradition, there are other ones. There's a whole bunch of other ones, like 100,000 water bowl offerings, 100,000 light offerings, 100,000 Dorje Khadro mantras. I can't remember all of them, but there's a lot of them. And so most people who do a long retreat, like a 3-year retreat, 100,000 satsas, these little things, people will do this sort of nundro, the Galupa nundro, which is more expansive before they do a long retreat. So this is one of the basic practices to get your mind ready to do some work. So we should rejoice in the fact that we have an opportunity to do this practice and to do it together and to do it in a somewhat quiet, controlled atmosphere. Let's see. So the motivation, this is, Venerable Roger Kumsang, who's Lama Zopa's attendant, and also, I think he's head of the FPMT. Maybe I'm not exactly sure what his title is, but he's been around the Dharma for many years, and I first met him in like 79 at Copan, and he had, before I went off and did this retreat, I was talking to him, and he had been in Delhi doing a retreat. And New Delhi is not exactly a great place to do a retreat, but he had done it at a Buddhist retreat center in town, which was relatively quiet. But he said he would do his sessions might be 2 hours long, But he would spend as much as an hour, and I don't want to misquote him, but an hour to an hour and a half doing the motivation. In other words, setting up the proper motivation. Because bodhicitta, you know, what we call the awakening mind, this motivation is like the key thing to making this practice a Mahayana practice. And it makes it way more powerful if we think of it in terms of a Mahayana practice. So what do I mean by Mahayana practice? Anybody want to say that?
Developing bodhicitta to benefit all sentient beings.
Yeah, to benefit others. So we're doing it not just for ourselves, although we want to do it. We want to be pure, don't we? But we have to remind ourselves again and again, because it's not our nature. Our nature is to be self-centered. Our nature is to be, it's about me. But that's not going to get it done. You know, we really have to take some effort at the beginning of every session to try to set a strong bodhicitta motivation, a strong Mahayana motivation. So that's really important too. So he said he spent 2/3 of the session doing bodhicitta meditation and less time counting the mantras and doing the practice. So that's going to be a big part of our practice, is taking at least, you know, 15, 20 minutes to maybe do some, and we'll use two texts, but maybe spend a little bit more time when we get to the part about bodhicitta, but we'll read through the foundation of all good qualities, and you can pick one that works for you, or you can alternate them, or the three principal aspects of the path. Those are all good ones to use. Those of you, how many people, I'm just curious, how many people are thinking maybe, you know, that this is actually going to be something they're going to do 100,000 of? Raise your hand if you're going to commit to doing 100,000. So, 1, 2, 3. Okay, great. All right, so those of you who are going to do count the mantras, I suggest that you go by, I couldn't find mine this morning. My kids take stuff and I don't know where it is, but I have these counters that how if you go into that's a nice one too. The one Hemant's got is nice, but there are these counters. In fact, they're better. You can get them on Amazon. Oh, that's great. But you can also get these counters that, you know, when you walk, you know how you're going into a movie theater or a place and they're hitting the button. You can get one that fits on your hand, or you can get one that has a round base, and you can, after you do a mala, okay, because you can't count the mantras you do. If you do 37 mantras, and by the way, this is my retreat mala. Now, you don't want to, this all sounds very mystical, right? I told you not to tell anybody what you're doing, and if you say it, just tell them you're doing a retreat investigating the nature of your mind. Well, your retreat mala is not something that you wear around your neck and show it off. You know, this is like a power, a source of power for you. This is this mala, which I keep around my house. My kids see it. But, you know, this is the same mala I did this retreat with 30, you know, ever how many years ago. And so it means something to me. And so your retreat mala, you might have another mala that's your date mala, but the one you do during the retreat is not one that you're going to, you know, make a public show of. You want to kind of keep it somewhat hidden. It's all about, you know, and one of the, again, why is Tantra, why is there some emphasis on secrecy in Tantra? What do you think about that? What do you think that's about? There's a couple of reasons that come to mind. Anybody in the back of the room here, in the very back of the room? How about on the right side where Patrick is sitting? Patrick, what do you think? Why do you think there's an emphasis on being a little bit conservative about talking about Tantra and whatever?
Well, one reason that I think of is that I find it, if I have an insight or a thought that talking about it is a good way of really losing or diminishing the benefit or the power of the insight. Anyway, but I'll just stop with that.
I hadn't thought of that one. That's a good one. Well, couple of things that come to mind. First, in Tantra, there's a lot of emphasis on secrecy because, or not making a public display of it because even though we have, in a sense, is that there's a lot of room for misunderstanding. For example, we're going to be visualizing Vajrasattva with consort and sexual union above the crown of her head. That's the visualization. So you can understand how someone who has an ordinary mind wouldn't understand the symbolic meaning of this. And this visualization is, very profound. And honestly, we could have done Vajrasattva as a solitary, just Vajrasattva alone, the sort of male version of Vajrasattva holding the bell in one hand and the Vajra in the other. But, Lama Yeshe Lama Zopa said it's much more powerful to do Vajrasattva with consort. So that's the one we're going to do. Yeah.
My mind doesn't understand consort at all, so that's way beyond me.
Yeah. Well, that's Patrick's experience. Yeah. That's a good point. I think that's Patrick's experience, and I think there's a fine line between sharing your insights and having that be beneficial, and having it become an obstacle. And I think that's one of the points is keeping some secrecy about what we're going to do and not making a big deal out of it could prevent obstacles. Like your family members might go, well, you're not going off and do a retreat, or particularly this kind of retreat. So, there's lots of stories about obstacles. And in fact, before you guys get there, I'll just back off a bit and tell you a couple of things that we could do. And I'm going to do it. I invite you to do it. But, before you get there on Friday afternoon, I'm going to do some practices and you're welcome to come and join me to dispel obstacles, the local spirits and stuff like that might be there that could cause hindrances for our practice. This is part of the tradition, is to do some practice to dispel obstacles. And when you put your seat down, there's a couple of things that we do. One is you put down, and I did this when I did this retreat, although I don't completely understand that, but everybody remembers what a swastika is, right? Well, when I first visited a Buddhist monastery in Tibet back in the early 80s, I saw this swastika in the, right at the entrance of the, made out of stone, actually, and I thought, this is interesting. But turns out that the swastika that the Third Reich had was, a right-turning swastika, and the one that the Buddhists use is a left-turning swastika. But what it stands for is, like, immovability. It's like power, it's like immovable. So we put, you can draw a swastika, a left-turning swastika, see if I can find it, and put it on right where your cushion's going to go, and then we're going to have some kusha grass, and you'll get two pieces of kusha grass, again, if you want to. I had it wrong. It's a right-turning swastika. I guess the Third Reich is the left-turning swastika. So you'll draw that, put it on a piece of paper, and then put it down. Then you'll have two pieces of kusha grass pointing this way. You'll put that down over the swastika, and that symbolizes concentration. Now, the Buddha, when he sat down under the Bodhi tree, remember what he said? He said, again, this kind of gets back to the swastika. He said, I'm sitting down here, and I'm either going to die on this seat or I'm going to get enlightened. That was the determination that he had. So that's part of what this is about, is getting our mind ready to use this seat to do some serious work. So the kusha grass points toward the, you know, forward, and then you get two pieces of long life grass, which is basically crabgrass. It's multi-jointed grass, has lots of joints in it, so you'll get, you could probably find that at the retreat center in the ground. You'll just go find some, a couple of pieces of crabgrass, you put that down, and you put your cushion over that. And that means that you're gonna, we're gonna use that cushion for the next day and a half or 2.5 days, however long we're there. We're gonna use that cushion. Now, here's another request I have, but I'm not gonna walk around like a policeman or a Vajra guard or something and make this, whatever. But my request is that if you're gonna do this, and honestly, it's okay if you don't want to do it all, but don't come to the retreat if you're not fully committed, because it disrupts the energy. You've all been to places, you see a group of people and they're all there, and then you come back the next session and five people are missing, and you go, where are they? I hope they're okay. I wonder where they are. I wonder what's going on. I hope they're not having problems and stuff like that. So, if you're having a mental emergency or something like that, and that, which brings up a whole nother issue of people who do this kind of practice need to be stable mentally. This is not the practice to do if you're kind of having a lot of emotional problems. This is a practice, because this is pure, this will bring it up. This is like a Roto-Rooter. You know, when your drains get clogged, you call Roto-Rooter, and they get all the gradu up, and it comes up pretty fast. And so this practice will be like that. Your things will come up, and if you do this practice, if you one of those has chosen 200,000 mantras, it will be, you'll see every aspect of your life. It will come up, and you'll have a chance to deal with memories. Things might come up that you didn't even know were there. Because, you know, again, this practice is designed to bring things up. Now, the other, yeah, Patrick?
The analogy might be more like a plunger.
Pardon?
The analogy might be more like a plunger.
Well, there you go. Yeah, it can be like a plunger, but you get my point. It brings up stuff. Some of it's going to be, you know, and you will get a chance to experience everything from, you might, I'm not telling you will, but there might be times during the retreat where you're experiencing this incredible blissful energy, like your body is like almost levitating. You completely fill with bliss that far exceeds the bliss of, you know, sexual bliss. It's just amazing bliss that you can, and the mind and the body are so blissful and happy. And the next moment, you could find yourself in the hell realms, you know, literally, mentally. You could be all over the place. You cannot have any, it's very, I'm saying things to you that I think you won't hear other people say, because I really want you to understand what you're getting yourself into. How many people think they have some control over that? How many people think they can control their mind? Let me see one hand. Yeah. So I promise you, when you go to one of these sessions that's meant to bring up stuff, your life, your karma, literally, from the past, well, it's just queuing up. And so what I got, one of the things that I learned from doing it, and still, you see it now in your meditation practice, we have virtually no control over what comes up. When you focus your mind on your breath, you have no control over the thoughts that are going to interrupt your meditation. Right? You don't. What we do have some control over is how we relate to those thoughts and feelings and emotions and whatever label you want to put on it. So that's going to be a big part of this retreat, is maintaining the practice no matter what's coming up. You want to keep your focus on the visualization of Vajrasattva with consort, and this is, here you go. Now, just get a taste of this. You're sitting there on your cushion, seeing yourself as an ordinary, deluded human being. Above your head is a lotus, a moon seat, and Vajrasattva with consort, all made of light, all white in color with precious ornaments and so on and so forth. And then around at the heart of Vajrasattva is Om, surrounded by the 100-syllable mantra. And as you say the words of the mantra, Anvatrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Tino, it's like the each syllable, and you can see them in English if you want to. You can't, none of us can memorize that in Sanskrit, so just you'll see it in the English. And you know, as you say the words of the mantra, in a perfect world, you'd be able to visualize the lights. You know, each syllable lighting up, and a flood of light and nectar coming down through Vajrasattva and his consort, through their central channel, through their place of sexual union, coming down through the moon disk and the lotus, coming into your body, right? Completely, and there's three visualizations that I'll just discuss in just a minute, but the first one is like flooding through you, pushing out all the negative karma of your body, as you say it. So you're trying to keep Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya, and you're trying to keep all this going on at one time. Stuff's going to come up. A lot of stuff's going to come up, and we have to learn how to see it. Again, understanding emptiness is going to be huge. Understanding that it's coming from the void, it's going back from the void, it's all impermanent, and so forth. It's just the relative truth in that moment. So there's a lot to do as you're visualizing your body being purified, and then as you visualize the second visualization is like a cup, but our body is completely polluted, you know, with all kinds of gradu, and it's like a dirty pot. You know, you fill it full of light and nectar, and all the garbage floats up to the surface and comes out through your ears and your eyes and your nose and all the orifices. So that's the second visualization of speech that we do. We're doing the mantra, visualize that. But again, you're trying to keep all of this in your mind. Do not let your concentration waver. Good luck. Right? But that's what we're trying to do. Keep our concentration very stable on this the whole time. Aware that we're purifying our speech. Okay? And then the last one is the purification of the mind. The light and nectar. And this time it's more like light. It comes into the body, and the body becomes completely like a light bulb turning on in a dark room, purifying the negative karma of mind. So what are you hearing here? What's the word that keeps coming up over and over again that is so important that you have to have faith in, or you're wasting your time? Karma. You have, this is where, the stronger your faith in karma, the more benefit you'll get in from this practice. What are the four laws of karma? What are the four laws of karma that we always talk about?
Definite.
Pardon?
Definite.
So karma is definite. So what does that mean?
You do an action, you get the result.
If you do a positive action, what happens?
Positive is happiness.
Yeah.
Negative action is suffering.
Yeah. In fact, we define virtue in Buddhism based on the result. And not exactly the immediate result, but the long-term result. Because if you're a rapist or somebody who likes to, you know, who likes to kill people, you know, and you get a charge out of it, you might enjoy that moment. But the long-term consequences are incredible suffering. So we're talking about the long-term consequences of actions that are positive. Positive actions lead to positive results, negative actions to negative or painful results. So that's important. So karma is definite like that. What's another law of karma?
Sanya. expandable.
It's expandable. So what does that mean?
It doesn't dilute. I mean, it keeps growing. Is it?
Yeah.
If it's created, then it continues to evolve even bigger, right?
Exactly. So you have a, you know, you look outside it at a big oak tree, and you have this tiny little seed, but it turned into this massive oak tree. And you go, how in the world? You look at that seed, you go, how did that happen? Well, that's like karma. And this is the reason, for example, that it's so important for us to do this practice, because we've been creating. You think, well, I've never killed anybody, or I'm not a thief, or I've never committed adultery, or I've never done these heavy negative karmas and so forth. But we've done it all in our past lifetimes. You know, this is just one lifetime. So it helps again to have some sort of faith in past lifetimes that we've done everything. We've killed countless times. We've stolen. We've stolen things countless times. In this lifetime, has anybody ever cheated on their taxes, you know, or deceived somebody? You know, we've done everything. Probably in this life, we've probably done some stuff. But so you want to, this is really important part of the practice, is to resurrect even current memories of things that you've done. So it's really helpful to go through the 10 non-virtues. Killing, we've probably killed insects anyway. And maybe some people have actually killed people. If you're a physician, you probably have, you know, some skeletons in the closet. And not intentionally, but it happens. So killing and stealing and sexual misconduct, which, you know, is, I like the way children, it technically is having sex with somebody else's partner, but really it boils down to unwise sexual behavior, you know, something that's harmful, mentally and physically, mentally and or physically. So killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior, lying, deceiving others, slander, bad-mouthing others. I did that yesterday. You know, we do it every day. We don't even think about it sometimes. Lying could be exaggerating, couldn't it? Oh, I did, you know, 100 and, you know, the fish was this big. You know, when it was this big. Or, you know, an exaggeration is a deception. It's lying. So lying, slander, harsh speech, frivolous speech. So those are the four of speech. We try to remember, before we do the practice, try to bring up your present memories of things that you've done in this life with an awareness that we've done it all in the past. So don't think of it, we don't want to think of ourselves as being, you know, pure, and then as greed or, you know, clinging, attachment kind of stuff, hatred and ignorance. And ignorance is vast. So we want to think of the 10 non-virtuous actions, but specific things that you've done in your life. I mean, we probably all have a handful, and maybe some of us two handfuls of things that we've done in our lives, and we go back and we remember it, we go, ooh, you know, there's a charge, there's a negative charge. And definitely, this practice can diminish that charge on things that we've done. I mean, in a retreat where there's a lot of women, there's always, well, and men, there's always somebody who's had an abortion and somebody who was a contributory cause of the abortion, you know? And that causes a lot of angst in people's minds. And this is a way to help to let go of some of that negative charge that might be around some, really, something like that. So we want to think of this as an opportunity to let, you know, to really let go of it. Now, there's a couple of words. All right, so wait a minute. We've got karma's definite, karma's expandable. Oh, well, so this center is named, you know, the Kadampa lineage was from Lama Atisha. His disciples started the Kadampa lineage that we're named after. And Lama Atisha was famous for, like, purifying right away for this very reason, that karma is expandable. So, like, he'd be going through Tibet, and he'd have a negative thought or something. He'd immediately get off of his horse, put his little Kadampa stupa down, make a little altar, and start doing prostrations to purify the negative karma. So, because he understood that. For us, Lama Yeshe says, very important to do this practice every night before we go to bed anyway. Do it 21 times before we go to bed to purify the broken vows and commitments and negative karma to stop the continuity of this expanding karma. So karma is expanding, then what is it? What's the third one? Yeah, so we can't experience the result without creating the cause, which means you're not here for, this is not an accident, is it, that we're all here? This is a result. Anything that happens in our life, and this is a little, you know, a lot of people think, they understand karma as well. I see that I'm responsible for my interpretations. Yeah, I mean, such and such thing happens, and I'm responsible for my interpretations of that particular event. And a lot of people understand karma at that very superficial level. But karma means that everything, the fact that we were born in this, you know, not in a different realm, but in the human realm, we were born a man, born a woman, born into a family that had some resources or a family that didn't, whether we've had a hard life or an easy life, everything, according to the laws of karma, we cannot experience anything without creating the results. So everything that has happened to us in this life up until now is the product of former karmic seeds that have ripened. And what's happening right this moment, billions of karmic seeds are ripening in this moment to force us to have the experience of being at Kadampa Center and thinking about Vajrasattva practice and about doing this retreat. So karma is huge. Everything is the product of our former actions. Everything. So, you know, how does that jive with emptiness? How does that jive with the view of emptiness? Anybody understand how karma and emptiness are like work together? Remember, we talk about everything, you know, that in terms of the understanding of emptiness, we talk about dependent arising, don't we, as a proof of emptiness. So everything arises or comes into existence in dependence upon causes and conditions. That's karma. Everything arises or comes into existence in dependence upon parts, and everything arises or comes into existence in dependence upon a consciousness that designates it, that labels it. So, all right, so what is this? It's a smartphone. It's a cell phone. 30 years ago, if I'd held this thing up, how many people would have any clue what? You think an object, a funky-looking electronic object. We wouldn't have any clue, right? It's only because of the imprints of our understanding of what this is from the past that we can see it. Now, does this thing, a dog came in and saw it, or a baby, newborn baby now, they wouldn't see a cell phone, would they? But you do, because we have the karma to see it. We have the imprints from the past to see it. Now, if you go out of the room and don't see it anymore, does it cease to exist? Where is it? In a sense, you're not seeing it anymore. So does it just disappear and go out of existence? What is it? What is it when you go out of the room? Think about that one. It, you know, everything comes in. So why do we see our life a certain way? Why do we see why we see the cell phone a certain way? The Buddhist point of view is there is no objective reality out there that exists independent of our mind labeling it. The label cell phone, where does it look like it's coming from? When you label cell phone, it looks like it's coming from your mind, cell phone. No, I'm sorry. But I got that backwards. It looks like cell phone is coming this way, doesn't it? You look at it and you go, oh, that's a cell phone. Anybody would see it as a cell phone. But we've just proven that not everybody would see it, including us, 30 years ago. So it looks like cell phone is coming from the side of cell phone, doesn't it? But in fact, it's not. We're labeling cell phone independence upon this particular object. There is no cell phone that exists independent of a mind labeling it. You got that? There is no cell phone that exists independent of a mind that labels it. Our whole world depends upon our mind labeling our experience. Being a man, being a woman, being happy, being sad, being whatever, being enlightened, all depends upon our mind. So, you know, as Rabina has said, I love the example, Lama Yeshe, you know, he referenced this. Right now, our karmic garden is so choked with delusions and our negative mind. It is very difficult for seeds of virtue to rise. Our garden is so choked with weeds that there might be some seeds of virtue. Every now and then a flower will come up, right? Here and there. But most of the time, 24/7, what are we motivated by? Selfishness. So if you want to know, it's very difficult to see the long-term consequences of an action. So if we were smart enough and precise enough to look at every moment of our body, speech, and mind, we'd notice that we're motivated by self-centeredness, right? Any action motivated by self-cherishing, you know, any action motivated by self-cherishing is always going to result in suffering. And 24/7, we're motivated by self-cherishing. It's very unusual for us to do anything with a purely altruistic view. So my point is to give us a context. We have, if we're smart, from a Buddhist perspective, we are excited about this retreat. My gosh, this is so great because we have a chance to do some serious work. We have a chance to weed the garden and allow some of these fruits, these positive karmic seeds can ripen. You know, to the point where we're, you know, how does positive karma ripen? In happiness. So rather than seeing ourselves as literally forced by our karma, right? Because we don't have any choice. We don't have any choice how we see this. You think you have a choice to call this, you know, a drumstick or a piano? No, you have no choice in the moment you see it. Now, you could say it, but nobody else would agree with you, and so they'd, you know, you end up going to Dorothea Dix and, you know, getting medicated or something. So we don't have a choice how we see things usually. Karma ripens and forces us to see ourselves as stressed out, unhappy, depressed, not good enough, not this, not that. Mostly negative self-talk, isn't it? 24/7. Most of our self-talk is not positive. But through doing the purification practices and planting the good, the positive karmic seeds of doing this practice, it's not only purifying the mind, but it's also planting an enormous amount of positivity, then the positive karma can ripen. So then we're forced to see ourselves as happier. And it's a process. Like, we're not going to wake up, I mean, Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, we're not going to walk out of there going, you know, I'm liberated. It's a process, but it will be, you know, and it will be a gradual process over time. But there is nothing more worthwhile than doing the work of deconditioning negative mind states and habituating ourselves to positive ones. Because 24/7, our very life depends upon the state of our mind, doesn't it? Honestly, we're all going to get sick, get old and die, and lots of problems are going to come up in the course of our lifetime, and how we relate to those problems is going to depend upon our mind. And from this perspective, whether or not we even have problems depends upon our mind. We could actually purify the karma for us to die this year on this retreat. Right? You may have the karmic seed now in your mind to be killed in a car accident. But as a result of doing this practice, you could actually diminish or purify that karma. So, you know, literally, we're creating our future by purifying our mind. It's a powerful thing to unto, and I think it's important to have some faith in karma. The fourth law of karma is crucial too. What is that? It's never lost. So every tiny action of kindness, just giving a bird a seed, or smiling at somebody walking down the street, or giving a beggar, you know, a penny or a dollar, or you know, every tiny act of kindness, all the way up to big acts of kindness, you know, like saving somebody's life. All of those things plant seeds that are never lost. So we can think, well, I just gave that beggar something. I didn't get anything back from it. But if we understand karma, everything we do results down the road, and it's like a, you know, it's like a, our consciousness is like a stream, and it could be this lifetime, if it was very, very strong karma that's reinforced over and over again, potentially either positive or negative, could ripen in this lifetime, right? Positive karma could potentially ripen in this lifetime. But generally speaking, most of the karma is going to ripen in the future lifetime. So when you give something to somebody, don't expect to get anything back. Do it because it's the right thing to do, and you do understand karma. It makes you feel good to do it. And it helps somebody else, and it's like Christmas time. You know, if you don't get a present, you give somebody a present, you don't get one, you know, because we expected something in return. Well, this is not like that. We don't, you know, little acts of kindness with no expectation of it or anything in return are never lost. And in the same way, being mean, nasty. People, I love the word, in the last 5 or 10 years, or 20 years maybe, people, cranky. I'm so cranky. Cranky means angry, doesn't it? What's another word? What's another euphemism for cranky?
Grumpy.
Angry. I'm angry. Anger is like poison, poisoning our system. So let's be honest about it. It's a mind of aversion. It's like, I can't stand it. I hate it. Call it grumpy. Call it cranky. Call it anger, because it's anger and it's poisonous. And we got to uproot that. We got to notice it. And if we understand that that karma is never lost, boy, it's like a slap in the face, isn't it? If you understand karma, you go, oh my God, I don't want the consequences of this. I want to purify this. This is, I guess, probably how Lama Atisha felt about it. So I got to clean this mess up. This is going to come back to me like a sledgehammer. You know, it looks like a little thing now, but it's expandable. You know, killing the mosquito today could look like getting shot in the head in a week. You know, karma is expandable. So, there you go. And you know, karma can result in entire lifetimes. It can result in us experiencing the result similar to the cause. For example, if you get angry, if you yell at people, and you get yelled at, well, guess what? That's called instant karma, isn't it? Experiencing results similar to the cause, experiencing an action similar to the cause. So if you know, this is why we say, like, for example, screaming and yelling and getting your anger out, what does that usually do? Does it make you feel good in the moment? Yeah, it does. In the moment, a lot of times, there's a huge surge of adrenaline. I know people that are rageaholics. They love the feeling of getting angry. It makes them feel good. Now, nobody wants to be around them. The room clears, you know, and then they settle down. They go, oh, I'm sorry I did that. But in the moment of being angry, it can feel quite good. But it's not healthy. It is not a good thing. It is not a good habit to have. So, you know, purifying, you know, our anger is you know, the results of anger are you know, eventually will come back to us. So we don't want to be yelled at. We don't yell at people. If we don't want to have the habit to be angry, don't give in to anger. Stop it. Expressing your anger might make you feel better for a moment, but it's not going to solve the problem. You just are creating the habit to be angry, and you'll be better at it the next time. And I've actually experienced this. personally, I think we all have if we think about it. So, you know, some negative habits that you, the more you engage in them, the easier they are to do. You know, addictions and so forth. You know, we can, what's the last one? The last, you know, like fruition law of karma. I can't remember it.
Environmental.
Well, environmental. We already talked about how you can, a karmic result can ripen in a whole lifetime. You could be reborn in a hell realm or a human realm, and you could be a man or woman and all that kind of stuff. But the environmental result would be like the karma could result in being born in a place where there's no resources, you know, like barren. Is, you know, it's really hard to get food. And or you could be reborn, you know, as Donald Trump's son, which I'm not so sure is that good either. But, huh?
Which one is worse?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, but where things come to you quite easily. So, you know, that's the environmental result. So having faith in karma and having a real sense of, like, oh my gosh, I have to clean this up. I have to clean up my negative karma because my very future depends on it. The quality of my life from right now, which could be over at any second, right? The quality of my life from right now until I die, and even the next life, depends upon my mind. And doing the work to purify it is huge. So let's take a break, because I'm talked out for the moment. Let's take about a 3 to 5 minute stretch break, and then we'll come back and do the practice and talk a little bit more.
That'd be a good thing to talk about.
Hello. Ding, 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 ding. So we can finish up.
I put the wire over my shoulder and put it on the back of my pants.
I know.
Yeah. It works pretty well.
It's too much trouble. I don't have a belt.
Oh.
These, my Lululemon pants don't have belts, so sorry.
Do you want me to ring the bell?
Yeah. 5% is my monopoly. 5% Yeah. Renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness are the, you know, those are the three principles of the path. We'll go with that in a minute. There's a lot to talk about, you know. In a little bit of time, Robbie said, "Just go for it." He told me, even if I overwhelm myself. Yeah. I tell you, though, I just loved it. Anyway, it's a good thing.
I have a question. I actually have two questions.
Oh my goodness.
The preliminary practice of 100,000 is the entire sadhana. You're counting the sadhanas, correct?
No. You're just counting the mantras.
So you're doing 100,000 mantras.
110,000
mantras.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but if you're in the middle of a rosary, now, they say that retreat, most people's rosaries have 108 beads in them. But they say these retreat rosaries. Now, I'm not tearing my rosary down to go do this, go put, you know, another. But anyway, they retreat rosaries, you know, supposedly have 110 beads in it. So that way, if you do, yeah, if you do it 1,000 times, then you get, you know, 110,000 like that. So you go one, you have to go around the whole rosary to count that as 110. If you get halfway around the rosary, you can't go, oh, that was 50 mantras. You can't count those. And when I was doing the Lama Yeshe used to say, I have to say, nobody can do this. He said, if your mind wanders during the practice, you have to start the mala over. Well, who can do that? Or if you break wind, you have to start the mala over. Or burp. You know, or, you know, whatever. So there's, I don't want to get too technical here. There's a, it can get quite, you know, but the point is, the whole point is to support our practice of concentration and to do the practice well, you know, to do it and do it well, not have it be, not have it be sloppy. So a couple of questions and also. Second question.
Is the empowerment thing. So we don't have to have an empowerment to participate in this.
No,
event.
We do not.
We're good to go. Okay.
Including with Vajrasattva and consort. We're
okay.
Good to go.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, it would be more powerful if we had the empowerment. In fact, Lama Zopa, back in 2000, if anybody was around, they may not remember they got it, but they actually got this empowerment from Lama Zopa in the year 2000 when we were at that place over there. Okay, good. So some people have it from there. Excellent. I wasn't there when that happened, but that's good to know.
Another question.
Yeah, sorry.
My question was, it seems like it's in this particular tradition, because I have experienced other traditions where this is not the case. When you talk about breaking the concentration from day to day, like if you happen to miss a day, like accidentally, or you're in a coma or something, God forbid. So what exactly is that? I mean, like, what's the reasoning behind that? Since it's not the same in all traditions, I've only noticed it in this one in particular.
Most people are going to do this practice on one cushion and in one retreat. And this is a very, you know, this is Lama Zopa really trying to help us, because we're, you know, most people don't have the time to go to Milarepa for 3 months and do it, because I think they do it every year up there in the winter time, or go to McLeod Ganj in India or Nepal or some retreat center. I think they do it at Root Institute in Bodh Gaya to do it for 3 months. That's a huge commitment. So he said, look, if you can keep the continuity of the retreat, then do it at home. If you can't, if you miss a day, it's not the end of the world. It just means you start over. Sounds like the end of the world if you were at 100,999 and then you, but the point is you start over, because that's the instructions. So, and you'd say that's your karma, like everything else. It's your karma to not be able to finish the retreat and have to start over. It sounds a little, you know, I have to say, karma sounds a little tough, doesn't it? But karma, you know, karma's like this. I've used this example a million times. What happened? Yeah, I mean, that's gravity. Gravity's not personal. You jump off a tall building, you will be killed. It's not personal. Gravity doesn't have it out for you. And karma doesn't have it out for us. But it's just the laws of nature. It's just how things are. This is the Buddhist worldview. And to the degree that we have faith in karma, that's the degree that we're going to want to purify. Because we understand that our experience of our life from every moment is the product of karma, former actions, ripening, forcing us to have an experience of ourselves as happy or miserable. So let's talk about the preparations for the retreat. A couple of things that Joey mentioned. Yeah.
One more question, I think, related to that. So when we're talking about it, preliminary practice, I mean, we're talking about the 100,000 mantras as a preliminary practice.
Yeah.
I think that's confusing. I mean, to me, and some people have asked me, and it's like, it sounds like we have to do that 100,000 before we do the retreat.
No.
Okay,
this is one of the preliminary practices that is part of the Nundra.
Right, but I'm just saying that it'd be nice if there was another term for the as a commitment or whatever. Referring to it as a preliminary practice is, to me, I think leads to some confusion. And secondly, I think it's important that...
What is the confusion? Clarify that, because I'm confused.
Well, this is a preliminary practice for what, then?
This is a preliminary practice. There are 100,000 mantras, 100,000 prostrations, 100,000 mandala offerings, 100,000 refuge formulas. Those four preliminary practices constitute, in most traditions, Nyingma, Kagyu, and some group of communities, I guess, but mostly in those traditions, that constitutes doing the nundra, which is a preliminary practice to prepare you for tantra.
Okay. But we're this is a tantra, right?
It is a tantric practice, so we're using a tantric practice.
Again, so it's confusing.
Well, we're not doing it. This tantric practice, we're using tantra. We're using our mind to purify our mind, and it is. But really, the tantric practice that we're talking about preparing for is Hatha Yoga Tantra. And even though this is Vajrasattva with consort, this is not the same thing as Haruka or Yamantaka or Gaudiya Samaja or those major, you know, Hatha Yoga Tantra deities that we, you know, that this is preparing us to do, or Kala Chakra.
One other part of the clarification. So, what about if in the retreat? So, what's a reasonable expectation for how many mantras can accomplish? And what happens if you say you've done 20,000?
I'm not really clear right now because I don't know how long the sessions are going to go. I'm thinking the first night, you know, we might have, you know, we might do mantras. We might do each mantra for 15 minutes, so each visualization for 15 minutes. I'll go over that in a minute. These are questions that we're probably, you know, I can get around to the next time, but I don't have an answer. I don't want to get into that kind of detail now.
Okay. I understand, but I'm just saying that I think that with Michelle's question, and to me it brought it up, because I think it's important to have some idea of how to get the most out of the retreat and how to complete the commitment.
Yeah. Well, you won't do it during this retreat, but you might get 20,000 mantras. You might, depending on how. See, you. How many people have memorized the mantras so far? Yeah. Now, it took me a day to memorize it, and I memorized one slightly different than the one that's in this text. But you know, I got pretty good at saying it. I could do the hundred syllable mantra in about 8 to 10 seconds. So, you know, you're going pretty quick. So, I mean, I don't want to. But just soon, the one I did was on body rook. That's one. So you want to be able to do it, enunciate every syllable, but you're not going to do it out loud. You do it under your breath so that the person next to you can't hear you, but you can hear yourself. And enunciation as much as possible, every syllable, quickly. And then if you go, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya, you're going to take forever. So you want to learn how to do it fast. And it actually helps your concentration to be able to do it quickly. Then, so it depends on a lot of things.
And the goal of that then also is then to be able, then to be comfortable with having the commitment to then, on a daily basis, to continue to 100,000 after the retreat.
Yeah, if you choose to do that. Now, I'll say this. This is a good point, too, Patrick. In a lot of people in the Galupa tradition will, you know, basically do their 100,000 on a daily basis. Like, they'll get up in the morning and they'll set up light offerings. Well, they'll set up their offer, their altar, and they'll do, like, 8 water bowls. Well, that counts towards your 100,000. So you do that every day, and then you do one light offering. Well, that'll take a long time, but, you know, you can do one light offering, and then you do prostrations to the 35 Buddhas, and then you sit down. Almost every tantric sadhana has Vajrasattva practice at the beginning of the sadhana. Of a Hatha Tantra sadhana, it has Vajrasattva practice. So you'll do 21 or 28 mantras of Vajrasattva, and so on. So you can do bits and pieces of the nundro on a daily basis, and that's part of the tradition. I don't want to get too far off base because I don't have enough time to get done what I want to do today as it is. But the point of the preparation is, Joey mentioned this. And when monks are, and usually it's monks. But when anybody's getting ready to do a long retreat, particularly like some people will do shamatha retreats, like trying to develop single point of concentration. And those monks, particularly the monks in Dharamsala, they used to, and this is not easy for Tibetans to do, but they would eat vegetarian food. They would be try to have impeccable morality, because they didn't want to go into the retreat with a lot of, you know, stuff going on in their head. So that for the 6 months before they went into the retreat, they would eat vegetarian food, you know, and really try to do everything as perfectly as they could to get their mind prepared for the retreat. So for us, that might mean paying your bills, getting your taxes done, apologizing to whoever you need to apologize to, cleaning up your house and taking care of things that are lingering, because you don't want that stuff coming up for you in the retreat. So as much as you can, get yourself mentally and physically prepared to do it. Then the other point of it, the other thing that I mentioned as a requisite for the retreat are the three principles of the path. And I think you have to have some basic understanding of that. I think everybody, is there anybody here that doesn't know what the three principles of the path are? Because intellectually, you know it. And we will meditate on a little bit on each of these aspects. But the main thing I'm going to focus on is bodhicitta. I'm not going to focus much on emptiness, although there's an emptiness meditation in the sadhana. I'm not going to focus on that too much. Now, the mantra that you're going to memorize probably is the Om Bhadra Sapa Samaya Manapalaya. But some of you, did Lama Zopa, did he initiate you into the Haruka Vajrasattva? Okay, so that's slightly different than this. And you can do that one if you want to. It's Om Vajra Haruka Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva, you know, like that. So, so you could do either one. And also, the sadhana that we're going to use is the short one, but there are several. There's one that's an intermediate sadhana, and there's one that's a more elaborate sadhana. That generally, if you're going to do a long retreat with a group, you'd use the most elaborate sadhana, which has vajra, bell, and damaru, and inner offering, and things like that. That may not make any sense to you right now, but you don't need those things. You know, if you have a vajra and bell, it's good to bring them, and even a damaru, but we're not going to use them much or at all. But it's good to have those. Okay, so I think we better do the practice. We're going to run out of time. Oh, the retreat structure. So here's what's going to happen. We need to be there by 7. Is that right, Donna? I suggest getting there a little earlier so you can get settled in, because I think dinner is at 7. And then we're going to do the first session after dinner. And my personal, this is my experience particularly, is that it's best if we do this retreat in silence. So if you have, and silence really means don't bring your, you know, leave your cell phone in your car if you can stand to do that. Wouldn't that be amazing to be electronic gadget free? Leave your cell phone in your car if you can. You can. It's not very long. If you absolutely need to talk, then it's just with, you know, you talk to me, and it's better if you write notes and keep your mouth shut. The point is to try to keep the energy inside. You know how we get in the conversations, and we disperse the energy. So keeping silence the whole retreat is my request. So my request is, if you can't do these things, it's really okay not to come. I mean, I don't want to discourage anybody. I think this is really, might be one of the best things you've ever done as a Dharma practitioner, if you really do this and do it well. But if you feel like you cannot make every session, And again, if you're freaking out, don't come to, you know, let me know. Stuff comes up for people, but that's part of the practice. I remember this lady that was at the center one time. She was talking to Geshe Soga one time, and she said, "Geshe, God, I had the hardest. I've been doing this by myself for practice time, and it's just kicking my butt. All kinds of stuff are coming up, and I hate it." And Geshe was going, "Great, it's working. Good, that's a good thing." So. Yeah, so please be ready to do the thing and do it well, which means please memorize the mantra, come to every session, and do your very best, and then we'll finish the retreat up with Dorji Khadra. So we're going to do one session Friday night. Go to bed, get up early. We want to do the first session before sunrise. Now, does before sunrise mean before the sun comes up or before the first light of day? I think we're probably going to do the before the sun comes up. But when is the sunrise going to, if we do the first session before sunrise? I remember when I did it before the sun came up. Is it? So maybe we'll do the first session. Can people stand 5:30? So we get up at 5, we do it at 5:30. Yeah, so what time do we do it? At 5:30? Yeah, so we'll do the first session 5:30. Then we'll break for breakfast. There'll be a short time for you to clean up and take care of some things. And by the way, I encourage you to have a little diary. I kept a diary. You can keep up with the number of mantras you do each session, and if you have any thoughts and things that might come up, you can write them in the diary. I did that, and I found that very helpful. And then after that, we'll do two more sessions with a 15-minute break. Now, if you have to sit in a chair, you can sit in a chair. If you can sit on the floor or cross-legged, that'd be great. If you have your own cushion, I think we're just going to bring these, or do you want to bring the big Zafus and whatever you call those things, Zabatons or?
We'll probably bring the Zafus here for people.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, probably not going to have. We have room for 40 people. It'd be great if 40 committed people showed up, but if we get 20 or 30, that'll be a pretty good number, I suspect. So, anyway, what was I talking about? What now?
Morning session.
Yeah, the morning sessions are 2, then lunch, and then we'll have a question and answer session, so that'll be a chance to bring up questions about but whatever maybe something you're experiencing or questions about the practice, things like that. And by then you should have a rough idea how many mantras you're going to get done. We're going to do 3 sessions and 2 sessions after the question and answer. The first one we're going to do with prostrations, because that one's usually the one where people go to sleep. So we'll do that one. We'll do the same sadhana, but then we'll get up and do Vajra, and the same visualizations, but we'll do with full-length prostrations, you know? We'll do like maybe 21 with each visualization, like that. Then we'll take a break and do another session. Then we'll take a tea break. As Lama Yeshe said, go get some tea, some Thai, and take a little break. We'll come back and do another session before dinner, and then have dinner, and we'll do another session before bedtime. So that's
7, isn't it?
Yeah, there's one after dinner. So that's 7. That's good. That'll be a good day. And then we'll get up the next morning. Anyway, we'll get up the next morning and do a session. And,
We get the next session. We'll do another session the next morning. Have breakfast. Then we'll do another session after breakfast. And then we'll do Dorje Kadra and a fire puja to purify any kind of bad karma that we, any mistakes, purify mistakes. Yes. You know what? I'm not sure yet. I'm going to see how my knees are holding out. But I'm going to try to sit on the floor. I've got some significant arthritis going on. If you can sit half lotus, great. Full lotus is great. Even, and the other thing is when you're doing the mantras, it's best to not move at all. So if you can sit, and there are different ways to, there are different ways to do it, do the, most people, you know, you can do the mantra holding the rosary at your heart, you know, just one beat at a time, like that, or you can do the mantra with the rosary, like I think I held my hands down like this and just did it, you know, held the rosary in one hand, like that, whatever you want to do. There's a way to do it though, but you'll count the mantras, so that'll be, and then we'll do Dorje Kadra to purify the negativities. Did I answer your question?
Not really.
Well, ask it again.
Well, the question was how long they would be, because that would depend on whether or not I would try to sit. Like, if they're an hour,
They're going to be close to an hour per session, 45 minutes to an hour. In the beginning, they'll probably be a little shorter, and then, you know, we'll go an hour. Yeah, if you can sit for an hour. Wendy? I guarantee it would be. Well, this is not about easy. This is about getting the practice done. And we might spend, you know, it really depends upon how much time we spend doing the motivation too. Let's go ahead and do it because we're running out of time and I want to do at least one today. So we're going to start out, I want to do something. I found this. I think it's helpful to start every session just doing 9-round breathing with Vaz breathing. You don't have to do the Vaz breathing, but I think it's okay. If people know what I'm talking about, Vaz breathing. We'll do it. I'll read Lama Yeshe's description of it in a second. So we're going to go over 12. Is that okay to finish this a little late? Yeah, if you have to go, then it's being recorded. But we'll do 9-round breathing, and then we'll do a couple of recitations, including today I'm going to do the foundation of all good qualities and the three principal aspects of the path and heart spoon. I'm going to do that, which is recollection of death. Okay. Then we'll do the sadhana. There'll be opportunities to do the meditations again, but we're not spend a lot of time doing, you know, bodhicitta motivation today, but that's what we'll do in the sadhana when we're doing the practice. Then we'll do the visualization. So this is the visualization for the Vaz breathing. And we're going to use the nadis, the visualization of the central channel and the nadis. Do you know what I'm talking about? The psychic channels. So you're going to visualize that the central channel goes from the top of your head out to the sort of the tip of the sexual organ, and the nadis go like an umbrella from the nostril, and they're smaller, more like the central channel might be this big, and the nadis are like little tubes of light about the size of a straw, and they go back and down, and they merge with the central channel. You imagine they merge with the central channel 4 finger breaths below the navel. So that's why we hold our hands 4 finger breaths below the navel, and the thumbs are touching at the level of the navel. And there's a reason for that. in some of the more advanced tantric practices, which we're not going to do. But in this practice, it also helps. So you're going to visualize the first three breaths. The breath is going to go down, is going to go up the right, you know, into the right side, all the way down, and it's going to merge. The breath's going to go from the right channel to the left, up and out, and pushing out all the negative energy of attachment and greed. Okay? Then we're going to breathe through do that three times. And with each breath, as you do the breath, say when you breathe in, at the very end. Okay, so we do three that way. Then we'll do three this way, the opposite side. You breathe in, goes down that channel, merges with the other channel, comes back out and pushes out all the negativity of anger and, you know, that negative mind of aversion. So you're breathing in the right, out the left, pushing out attachment, breathing in the left, out the right, pushing out anger. Okay? And then the next one, we breathe in both sides and hold, and the breath, we try to hold the breath right there at the level where our hands are, where these two side channels and the central channel are. We hold that breath there and tighten the muscles of the pelvic floor. And you can also slightly push your diaphragm down, but what you'll experience is some kind of blissful energy when you do that. You'll swallow when you take this breath, and then when you exhale, you imagine that energy goes up and dissolves into the central channel. So we'll do that three times, and then that'll settle your mind down, and we'll be ready to do some work. And that's better than just watching the breath 21 times, or because it really is something you can focus on for 9 breaths and have your mind in a positive state. So let's, I think I said what Lami Ishii said. So let's do that right now. I'll talk you through it. Okay. Okay, so sit up straight and try to do that visualization that I mentioned. And it might be confusing because it is written up so many different ways. You see it in different texts to explain a different way. This is the way Lama is explaining it. So the first three breaths are going to be through the right nostril, and you can include your with your finger if you want to, but this is more visualization than it's more important to visualize it than it is to actually do it that way. But some people will occlude their nostril with their finger. But you breathe through the right nostril, the breath comes down. Let's do that now, and it joins. The right nadi joins with the left nadi, and as you exhale, imagine that all the negative energy is coming out the left nostril, all the negative energy of attachment, and do that three times. Next time, we'll do the opposite, breathing in through the left and out the right. And this time we're exhaling the negative energy of anger. And then this last time, you're going to breathe in through both nostrils, and the breath will come down and join the central channel, and you'll hold that breath there at the central channel and tighten the muscles of the pelvic floor. Here's Lama Yeshe's exact words. Now breathe in through both nostrils together, bringing the air down through the right and left channels to the point where they join the central channel. To help you concentrate on this, swallow some saliva as the air goes down. When the air reaches the central channel, tighten the inner pelvic muscles and draw energy up from the lower chakra through the central channel to the navel chakra, where it meets and mixes with the air energy from above. Hold your breath and concentrate on the blissful energy you can feel at this point. This is important. As soon as you no longer feel comfortable, exhale naturally through your nostrils, but visualize that instead of going out, the air that you've been holding goes up and dissolves inside the central channel. Do this 3 times. So let's do this together. So remember, as you breathe in, you swallow some saliva. And when you've completed the third of those breaths through both nostrils, then we're ready to do the practice. Before we do it, I want to read, this is Lama Yeshe's description of the visualizations, okay? I've sort of talked a little bit about it, but this is what he says. Much light radiates from the hum and the mantra rosary at the divine hearts of Haruka, and in this case Vajrasattva, or if you choose to use Haruka, but Vajrasattva and his consort, filling all of space in the 10 directions. Let me say this. This is the aspect, this is basically Haruka Vajrasattva visualization, but we're just doing the Vajrasattva mantra with it. All right, so this is Vajrasattva with consort. So you've got a picture in the sadhana. Look at the first page of the sadhana. Completely made of light, okay? And so from the light radiates the hum and the mantra rosary. So remember I said the mantra is sitting on this moon disc and is sitting in the center, and the letters of the 100-syllable mantra are going around it. All right, much light radiates from the hum and the mantra rosary at the divine hearts of Vajrasattva and his consort, filling all of space. So this is what we're going to do in the practice, but I'm sorry, I'm just going to whisk through this. We'll explain it more next time. But he's basically presenting offerings, purifying all sentient beings and presenting offerings to the Buddhas and their sons, but filling all the space in the 10 directions. So the mantra is leaving this and making offerings, filling all the space in the 10 directions, purifying all the negativities of all sentient beings and making offerings to the Buddhas and their sons. So this is getting ready for the actual purification practice. The pure essence of the transcendental wisdom of all the holy beings, body, speech, and mind, returns in the form of light. So you send out, this is all part of the how Tantra uses your mind to purify itself. So we're visualizing from the heart of the Vajrasattva that we imagined above our head, you know, lights going out, purifying all sentient beings and presenting offerings to the Buddhas and their sons. And the pure essence of the transcendental wisdom of all holy beings, body, speech, and mind, returns in the form of light, dissolving into the hum and the mantra rosary of Vajrasattva and his heart and his consort. So, lights going out, purifying all sentient beings, and making offerings to the Buddhas and the sons, and all of these holy beings, this amazing light just comes back to the hum and the mantra rosary, And it sort of like activates it, okay? So dissolving back into the hum and the mantra rosary of Vajrasattva and his consort, from these vast quantities of blissful white kundalini energy, pour down his central channel. The essence of this kundalini energy is his blissful transcendent wisdom. Its energy is inexhaustible, the exact opposite of our limited energy, which always runs out quickly and requires us to eat and replenish it. When you're doing this visualization, you should also visualize white kundalini energy pouring down the central channel of Haruka Vajrasattva's consort, Dorji Nima. Now, this is not written in the text of the sadhana. You're going to have to... I'm teaching you this now, but this is what Lama Yeshe is saying. When we get to this point in the sadhana, we're going to stop and do this visualization. Okay? All right. The blissful white, because all it says here is the nectar just comes and purifies your negative karma, body, speech. It's very cryptic, but this is a more elaborate explanation of the visualization. It says the blissful white kundalini energy pours down the central channel past the navel, of Vajrasattva, past the navel and sex chakras and leaves their pure bodies from the point where they're joined in union. It continues down through the moon and lotus seat, which, being in the nature of transcendental wisdom, offer no resistance. It enters through your crown chakra, rushing down through your central channel with the force of a powerful waterfall. It's very important for you to visualize this torrent of white nectar is overwhelmingly powerful. It surges into your body and spreads through your entire system. This white energy is not physical, but somehow it feels incredibly real. You're also filled with the radiant light and almost totally overcome with bliss. All defilements of body, speech, and mind disappear without a trace. And then he goes on, which I don't have time to do now, but the three visualizations I've already talked about. The first one is the first time, you know, we're going to do it 21 times. We probably won't do it more than 7 right now because of time, but we'll do it and you'll visualize the light and nectar coming into your crown. You're seeing yourself in ordinary human form, not as a deity, but in ordinary human form. Or if you have had, here's what Lama Yeshe says, if you've had a Hashtag Tantra or a Tantric initiation and you've been empowered to see yourself as a deity 24/7, you drop the divine pride of being the deity and see yourself in more of an ordinary form. The light and nectar enter here, and it comes down, and it pushes all the negative karma as you're saying the mantra, you know, Om Bhadra Sattasamaya Manaplaya, as you're saying the mantra, you imagine all this negativity is leaving the lower orifices of your body and disappearing into the space below, into completely disappearing. And you're feeling like, I'm purifying all this negative karma of what we call physical negative karma, diseases, the causes of disease that you have now maybe, but also future diseases, all that negative karma that would ripen in the future as a sudden death or an illness. All of that, you're getting rid of that as you say the mantra, and you do this visualization of kind of being flushed out by this torrent of amrita, nectar, like light and nectar coming through us. Okay? So we do that. Ever how many times we do it? 7, 21 or more. Then we do another the second visualization purifies the speech. And it's the one where it's like you have we imagine our lower parts of our body completely filthy. And as the light and nectar enter our body, all the nectar gets beneath the negativity, this cruddy stuff. And it pushes it up to the top, much like, it pushes, so that, like, milk and cream, you know, the cream is actually the bad stuff in this analogy. So the negativity comes up, it leaves your body, the verbal negative karma leaves your body through your mouth, your nose, your eye sockets, your ears, through all the upper orifices of your body. As you say the mantra, you visualize that all the verbal negative karma is being purified. So Om Bhadra Sattasamaya. Again, as much as you can, keeping this entire visualization in your mind's eye, completely made of light, nothing solid, completely made of light. Remember again, Vajrasattva is inseparable from the Dalai Lama, Lama Yeshe, Lama Zopa, Geshe Galik, whoever your guru is, and it could be numerous ones. Your mind, Vajrasattva's mind, and your guru's mind are inseparably one, of the same nature. And so, but particularly helpful to see the Vajrasattva as, and your guru is inseparably one. And then the last visualization, of purifying negative karma of mind, it's like flipping on a light. And Lama gives a more elaborate, and I'll talk about this the next Thursday that we meet. We can get into this in more detail. But I think the easiest way to do it is just as soon as this light from Vajrasattva and consort, as soon as it enters the crown of your head, it's like turning on a light in a dark room. It completely eliminates your ignorance. So your mental negative karma, the karma of ignorance, completely eliminated. So verbal negative karma, physical negative karma, mental negative karma, completely purified as we do this mantra. And then when we complete the mantra, there's a couple of little phrases when thank you for purifying us, and Vajrasattva will say your body, you know, that you have been purified. And this is really important. It's really important to believe in your heart of hearts. This has to do with your faith in Tantra and your faith in your guru, by the way. That Lama Geshe Galik isn't sending us into retreat because he wants to waste our time. He really believes that this is going to help our mind. And so our gurus are not asking us to do this. They have great faith, and to the degree that we have faith in Tantra, in the Dharma, and our teachers, to that much we have faith that we've actually done something meaningful. We purified our body, speech, and mind to some degree, right? And then we do the dedication. So let's give that a try. And since time is up, we will not do much. We won't do much mantra. Sorry. We'll just do maybe 7 of each of the mantras. And we'll do it out loud. All right, you ready? Now, Venerable Amy, who's coming here, she's done this. I don't know. I'm sure she's done it once, twice, 3 times. She's also going to be a great resource. And she'll clarify all the mistakes that I made today. So I'm doing my best. But, you know, this, you're going to get different versions from different people, maybe. So get ready. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in all the 3 vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, and the bodhisattvas of the 10 bhumis. But most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in 3 vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, and the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, and the bodhisattvas of the 10 bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in all the 3 vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, and in the bodhisattvas of the 10 bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my holy guru forever. Excuse me. I think we should read this together. Almost every action I do 24 hours a day is motivated by worldly concern, attachment to the comfort of this life. It is like this from birth to death, this life, and it's been like that from beginningless rebirth. Nearly every action I have ever created has been non-virtuous because of suffering. Not only that, but constantly I've also been breaking my pratimoksha, bodhisattva, and tantric vows. Worst of all, I've created the heaviest of negative karmas in relation to my virtuous friends, getting angry at them, generating wrong views, having non-devotional thoughts toward them, harming their holy body, and disobeying their advice. Having these negative imprints on my mental continuum is unbearable. It's as if I've swallowed a lethal poison. I must practice the antidote right away and purify all this negative karma immediately without a second's delay. In this way, generate strong feelings of urgency and regret. Now we'll do the next one. Many people my age or younger have died. It's a miracle that I'm still alive. It's an incredible opportunity to purify my negative karma. Death is uncertain, but its time is most uncertain. If I were to die right now, I would definitely be born in the lower realms. Because I could not practice Dharma, that would remain in the lower realms for countless eons. Therefore, how unbelievably fortunate I am to be able to practice pure negative karma right now without even a second's delay by practicing the Vajrasattva's meditation recitation. Now, the power of dependence. But I am not practicing the Vajrasattva purification by myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all hell beings, pretas, animals, humans, shuras and shuras, and intermediate state beings from all their suffering and its causes and lead them to unsurpassed enlightenment. In order to do this, I must first reach enlightenment myself. Therefore, I must purify all my negative karma by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. Now, so I'm going to give you a real brief visual. This we'll go into this more in detail, and it's also in this text, but we'll go into it on the Thursday before the retreat, actually 8 days before the retreat. But usually what you do is above the crown of the head, you visualize the letter PAM, P-A-M. And that transforms into like this thousand-petal lotus. This giant white lotus. And on top of that is an ah, A-H. Again, the Sanskrit syllables would be nice to visualize, but most of us can't. And that transforms into a moon disc. And above that is a five-pronged vajra, which is all the vajras, all the, you know, the dorjis that you see are five-pronged, and at the center of it, it's marked by hum, H-U-M, okay? And there's some other things to visualize, but we can just imagine that that vajra and hum then instantly transform into vajrasattva with consort, with all their completely made of light, the entire visualization made of light. And this is this Buddha figure. We're using our mind and with Vajrasattva's help to purify our mind. Right? So Vajrasattva and consort, completely made of light, in union, wearing precious ornaments and jewels and so forth, and Vajrasattva's holding a vajra in his left hand and a bell in his right by his waist, and his consort's got a skull cup and a knife, a sort of a curved knife in her hand. Everything has a symbolic meaning, which we don't have time to go into, but it means something that has to do with enlightenment and purification. That's the take-home message. And so we visualize this, and at their heart is this moon disk with the syllables of the 100-syllable mantra and the hum at the center, right? And then, remember, we visualize light and nectar going out, purifying countless sentient beings that are surrounding us and making offerings to the Buddhas and their sons. The light comes back to Vajrasattva's heart, to the hum and the mantra rosary, and then this light and nectar begins to flow down through us. So it says, above the crown of my head, and I'll read this. Above the crown of my head, seated upon a lotus and a moon seat, are Vajrasattva, father and mother. Their bodies are white. Each has one face and two arms. He holds a dorji and a bell, which is a vajra and a bell. She holds a curved knife and a skull cup. They're embracing each other. The father is adorned with six mudras, and the mother with five. He sits in the vajrapasa posture, and she in the lotus. Vajrasattva is my root guru, the holy mind of all the Buddhas, the Dharmakaya, who out of his unbearable compassion, who embraces me and all other sentient beings, appears in this form to purify me and all others. In this way, your mind is transformed into guru devotion, the root of the blessings and realizations of the path of enlightenment. So you're seeing Vajrasattva and consort as inseparably one from your guru, and in the same nature as your own mind and your guru's mind. Okay? Very important. Then, on the moon disk at Vajrasattva's heart stands a syllable hum, encircled by the garland of the 100-syllable mantra. A powerful stream of white nectar flows from the hum and the mantra garland, and I've cleansed of all sickness, spirit harm, negative karma, and obscurations. Now we'll do this together, and I guess we'll do it out loud. We'll just do it like seven times each. Now, I don't really know the tune to this, so who's good at this? Who knows the tune to this one? Pardon? All right, go ahead and you do it, because I'll mess it up. Yeah.
Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinapadidamidam Mevava Shittokayo Mevava Shittokayo Mevava Anarata Mevava Shavasiddhi Mekayacha Shavakama Shichame Chiyam Chiyam Kuruham Ahahahaho Bhagavan Tavatata Gadra Vajramame Mucha Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Janapa Tino Nino Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Sukhokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Savasiri Me Kayacha Kama Sucha Me Chiram Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Bhagavan Savatata Gaja Adramami Mucha Bhava Mahasamaya Sama Ahum Pe
Adrasapasamaya Manapalaya Adrasapatinapa Sukameva Mebawa Sukokaya Mebawa Sukokaya Mebawa Anarata Mebawa Sawasiri Mepayacha Sakama Suchame Chidam Sriyam Kuruham Ahaha Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gata Vajramame Mucha Ama Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe Vajrasapa Samaya Vanupalaya Vajrasapa Tinyapa Chitumeva Mebawa Sutokaya Mebawa Sutokaya Mebawa Anarata Mebawa Sawasi Mepayacha
Sawakama Sushame
Sidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gaja Bhadra Mame Mucha Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Aum Pe Om Bhadra Sapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadra Sapa Dinapa Sutumema Mamawa Sutokayo Mebawa Sutokayo Mebawa Anatomakmebawa Sawasiri Mekayacha Sawakama Sutame Sidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vajramami Mucha Bhava Mahamahamaya Abha Ahum Pe. Now wait 1 minute. Now we're switching. That was purifying the body. Now we're just going to do three of each of the next two visualizations. The next one is purifying the speech. Remember, filling up like a dirty cup being, sorry. All right, so go ahead. Bhadrasattva samaya manapalaya Bhadrasattva tinapati tumimu me bhava Sutokayo me bhava Sutokayo me bhava Anarata me bhava Sarasiri me prayacha Savakama sucha me chiram sriyam kuruham Ahaha ho bhagavan Savatata gadra Vajramami mucha Vajrasafas mama mama Sattva ahum pe Vajrasafas samaya Manapalaya Vajrasafas dinapa Sutokayo mebawa, sutokayo mebawa, anarata mebawa, sarasiri mepayacha, sawakama suchame, chidam sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho bhagavan, sawatata gadra, vajramami mucha vajrabhava mahasamaya, sapa ahum pe. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Tinapa
Chita Chita Mebawa
Sutokayo Mebawa Sutokayo Mebawa Anarata Mebawa Sawasiri Mepayacha Sawakama Suchami Chiyam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vajramami Mutsa Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sava Aum Pe. Now, we're going to purify the mind, again, like a light entering our body, completely dispelling all the darkness of ignorance and the negative karma of mind. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Sutukhanu Mebhava Sutokayo mebawa, sutokayo mebawa, anarata mebawa, sarasiri mekayacha, kama suchame, chidam sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho bhagavan, sawatata gadra, vajramami mucha, vajrabhava mahasamaya, sava ahum pe, om, vajrasapa samaya, manupalaya, Vajrasattva Dinapa Sukhinguru Mebhava Sutokayo Mebhava Sutokayo Mebhava Anarakta Mebhava Sawasiri Mepayacha Kama Suchami Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vajramami Mucha Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sattva Ahum Pe Om
Sattasamaya Manupalaya Padrasattadina Patitabhumumibhava Sutokayo mebhava Supokayo mebhava Anavato mebhava Savaitiri mepayacha Savakama sutrame Tidam sriyam kuruham Ha 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 ho Bhagavan Savatata gaja Amamamimucha Bhadra mavamah samaya Sava ahumpe.
Now, we'll, let's read this together. From the crown of my head, Guru Vajrasattva says, from the race, negative obscurations and broken and damaged pledges have been completely purified. And this is where, you know, this is where you have to generate strong faith that this has actually happened. Before Guru Vajrasattva, I vow never to again to commit these negative actions from which I can easily abstain, and not to commit for a day, an hour, or at least a few seconds those negative actions from which I find it difficult to abstain. Now, in this absorption, you know, those who've had, most people, you just visualize that Vajrasattva dissolves into your light, and then you think my body, speech, and mind have become inseparable from Vajrasattva's pure body, speech, and mind. You don't visualize yourself as Vajrasattva. So that you could if you had the initiation into the practice. But for, you know, for us, the way we're going to do it is just imagine that you're pure. Just like my body is pure. My body, speech, mind are pure, just like it's separable from Vajrasattva's body, speech, and mind in that sense. So Guru Vajrasattva is extremely pleased with your pledge. Vajrasattva, father and mother, melt into light and dissolve into you. Your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's body, speech, and mind. And then let's read the dedication together. In emptiness, there is no I, creator of negative karma. There is no action of creating negative karma. There is no negative karma created. Place your mind in that emptiness for a little while. In this way, look at all phenomena as empty. They do not exist from their own side. With this awareness of emptiness, dedicate the merits. Let's do this. Due to all the merits of the three times collected by me, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, all sentient beings, which appear to be real there, but are empty, may I, which appear to be real, but is empty, achieve Vajrasattva's enlightenment, which appears to be real, but is empty, and lead all sentient beings who appear to be real, but are totally empty, to that enlightenment, which appears to be real, but is empty, by myself alone, which appears to be real, but is also totally empty, non-existent from there. May the precious bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success for myself and all other sentient beings, be generated with my own mind and in the minds of all sentient beings without a second's delay. May that which has been generated be increased. May I and all the sentient beings have Dhamma Sankhapa as our direct guru, and all our lifetimes never be separated for even a second from the pure path that is totally praised by the conqueror Buddhas, and actualize the complete path, three principal paths, two stages of highest yoga tantra, the root of which is guru devotion, within our minds as quickly as possible. Just as brave Manjushri and Samantabhadra realize things as they are, I may dedicate these virtues in the best way that I may follow after them. Whatever dedication the three times victorious ones Gandhabhus have admired as best, in the same way, I also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue so that I may perform good works. Okay, thank you. So a lot to think about, and there's more to think about. We'll cover it. We may actually need to do another class before then, but I think not. I think we can do it. We can tie it up. This, please do not take, Donna wants you to leave this here. So we'll use these at the retreat. At the next class, we'll spend more time doing it and trying to answer questions. I'll try to add a little bit more detail to the visualization, particularly, you know, the general. I think it's very important just to say Vajrasattva with consort appears before your above the crown of your head is hard. It's really hard to get some real sense of it. So I think it helps to see the palm transforming into the lotus and the on to the moon cushion and the Vajra and so forth. To do those visualizations really gives some power to the sense of a presence of Vajrasattva above your head. So we'll do that. We'll practice that and talk about it in more detail, and I'll try to answer your questions. And then we'll do the practice more and talk about more details of the retreat and answer any questions. And that'll be the 16th, I believe. Yeah, it'll be Thursday night, and we're going to start at 7 o'clock. So 7 o'clock to 9. Okay, so thank you, and thank you for you being here. And Wendy, we can answer this your question later. You can come up and ask me.
And I have other copies of the practice. If you need one to take home and start practicing it, I just wanted to keep the binder here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Oh, and it's the famous little booklet that